AthensBannerHerald.com and the Athens Banner Herald. This is the Georgia Bulldogs podcast. Bulldogs Extra. Now, Mark Weiser and Ryan Dennis.
Here we are. Welcome in to Bulldogs Extra podcast from OnlineAthens.com and the Athens Banner Herald. I'm Mark Weiser, UGA beat writer for our organization here. And we got a lot to talk about, man. Georgia basketball with a big win. First time in 14 tries, I believe, that they beat the Wildcats of Kentucky. We'll talk a little football later. But in this world of COVID and all, Mark, you weren't at the game last night, I suppose. Were you in your man cave watching the Georgia basketball be victorious in a somewhat buzzer beater there? A late field goal to win it, but how did you enjoy last night's victory?
Wait, did you say our organization? Did we need to say Online Athens, Athens Banner Hill? Did you say that already?
I said it. You must have been dozing off over there.
Our organization. I was watching the game on the big screen. It's not a bar big screen or anything, but impressive win for Georgia. It showed a lot of grit and determination to not fold at the end, to come back. They were down, I believe it was about 6 points with about 2 minutes to go.
Yeah, and then KD hit a big three there. Yeah.
And yeah, he did. And then he shot one really early on the next possession, I believe, wasn't it?
Yeah, he had his shot kind of altered there. Had to shoot a little high, but yeah.
Look, this isn't a great Kentucky team.
They're very bad, actually.
You say that.
No, they're bad.
They're 3-3 in the SEC, but they're 4-9 overall. They played what John Calipari has said was a way too hard non-conference schedule. But look, Georgia needed to win a game like this. This maybe, unless Calipari is this program's on a keep going down. Georgia has had they played with really good Kentucky teams in the past. And then, haven't been able to pull out a W, and, some of the games, the scores don't indicate how close they were. But, look, it's a good sign that Georgia can win a game like this. It was a game where they led, it felt like Georgia, led for most of the way or it was in control for most of the way. 10 lead changes. I'm looking time with the lead. Georgia, 25 minutes. Kentucky with 13. Tamani Kamara only scores 6 points, grabs 9 rebounds, but, you get guys to come up big.
I mean, Andrew Garcia, I think, was the player of the game, and maybe Kyer for his defense and whatnot, but Garcia, what, 16 points or 14 points?
Yeah, 16 points for Andrew Garcia, the transfer from Stony Brook. Justin Kyer, the grad transfer from George Mason. Only 3 of 12 shooting, but 5 steals, 7 points, 3 assists. Just another kind of building block win for Georgia. Ole Miss and Kentucky, and then Florida will come to town now on Saturday as Georgia goes to 9-4, 2-4 in the SEC.
Yeah, as you mentioned, there's been a lot of close calls for Georgia, not just against Kentucky, against a lot of teams, and building up 15, 17-point leads sometime to just watch it all come crashing down. You think of Missouri, Florida, games that Georgia had in hand the last couple of years. You expected that again last night. I texted a buddy before the game, and it just seemed that, you see this all the time from Georgia. It's like you think you're going to beat Kentucky, even when they have good teams. You think back to J.J. Frazier, Yonte Maton days, when they looked like they'd have it in their grasp, and it would slip away. And it looked like they were going down that path last night. But like we had mentioned, KD Johnson with the big three, forced Tennessee, Tennessee, Kentucky into a missed shot, and you gave yourself a chance. So, yeah, is this a building block that Tom Crean needed a big win? I don't know where you'd put this as far as big wins, because Kentucky is really down this year. But the fact that they escaped out of there with the win, didn't matter who they were playing in the past, they couldn't pull this game out. So is this a step in the right direction for this program?
This is the point in the podcast where I'm going to say we're going to be talking some football also. If you're not big on basketball, don't go away. We'll talk about some changes on the coaching staff. But let's go back to basketball. Here's what I'll say. It's a big win because it's Kentucky. It's a big win because of the way you did it at the end. Georgia had the ball underneath the basket with like 3.6 seconds left. Sevier Wheeler, you know, with the inbounds pass, Georgia called timeout to set it up. John Calipari saw what they were doing and called timeout himself. And then Sevier Wheeler didn't get the look he liked on the play, and they called another timeout. Then they used Justin Kyer on a screen to spring
PJ Horn,
the transfer from Virginia Tech out of South Georgia.
Tifton,
Georgia. Is that south? That's
south of pretty much, I'd say, in between Macon
north of Valdosta. Right?
Macon and Valdosta, in between.
Yeah. Isn't Tifton, what's the billboard say? Is that where they, don't they advertise like it's the, they have great internet or something? What, I don't know.
I think they call themselves the best little town in between Macon and Valdosta.
Is that true?
I don't know.
All right. Yeah. So here's the impact of the win in terms of, you know, getting Georgia closer to, like, you know, being a team that's going to be in the conversation for the NCAA tournament or something like that. No, that's not the kind of win because of the kind of season that Kentucky had. I looked this morning at the NCAA net rankings. It didn't move the needle at all. Let's see, Georgia, I think they were 100 in the net rankings before the game, and with the win, they moved up to 99. So that
one spot?
That's it. That doesn't do anything. But, you know, it's some positive momentum, and you know, Georgia will carry on now. You know, I think they move up like 10th or 11th in the SEC standings. You know, it's another W, two-game winning streak now as Florida, who just kicked the crap out of Tennessee, will come to town Saturday.
And this is a program that's, what, two wins a couple years ago, four wins in the SEC last year.
Five last year.
Was it five? Yeah. Either way, it hadn't been good for the first couple years of Tom Crean. So a couple wins, you know, maybe start the ball rolling. On.
Hey, Stegman's announced attendance last night was 1638 in the socially distanced reduced capacity. One of them, actually, I think they count the media.
Okay.
Count the media. Ryan was sitting in the rafters near Sweaterman. Is that right?
Right. So, you know where the cameras are set up. I had the same view as the people at home on TV. I just sat up there by myself. Sweaterman was to my left, dancing as he always is.
Did it look like 1638?
You know, the more I thought about it, I know we were texting about 5 minutes before the game, and I said there might be 500 people here. But the more I thought about it, and the crowd filtered in for most of the game, yeah, that's probably an accurate number, but it felt comfortable. That was the first basketball game I'd been to this year at the Steg, so it didn't. They did a good job, and I will say that the attendants or whatever were going around, and they'd get on to some people for not having their mask on. So it was comfortable.
Now, you were on a media credential, but you're not sitting in the media press.
I bargained with the SID.
Right. Folks. Well, the question I have is, did you then partake in the media meal?
Yeah. So you had to get it as you walked in to get your credentials.
Well, and what was it?
Actually, they had a decent little burrito that I guess is made by the food service people. And you had your little, you know, you had your little kit of peanuts, potato chips, Kit Kats, and Famous Amos chocolate chip cookies that I devoured, but you know, during the game, in different parts of the game. So, so that was good. But anyway, big win for Georgia, and you know, much needed momentum. You ready to talk that football that everybody's been eagerly awaiting?
I mean, we're only, you know, 7.5 minutes into the podcast, but you know, I mean, if you have some, you know, if you know where this is flowing, that's fine by me.
We found out on Sunday that Charlton Warden would be taking the defensive coordinator job at Indiana, leaving the defensive back position he had at Georgia. And I know you took a little dive into what could be for Georgia at that to fill that position. No former Georgia players coming back. No, I don't know. Who comes to mind? Brandon Boykin jumping in to be a defensive backs coach at Georgia. Or, you know, obviously Champ Bailey coming out of football retirement, so to speak, to take the defensive backs. Nothing like that, you don't think?
Brandon Boykin, I think he's got a good gig on the SEC network. SEC network. I went through through, you know, kind of came up with a list of what would make sense as, you know, kind of looking at maybe how Kirby has made some hires in the past and some of the connections between him and Dan Lanning, Glenn Schumann. Now, I posted this on Monday morning. By Tuesday morning, I believe, a couple of the names on the list already had gotten hired or promoted at their current school. One of them was Jay Vilai, who was at Texas. It was hired at Houston to be the defensive backs coach. Now, I'm not saying if Kirby called and said, do you want to be at Houston or you want to be at Georgia, what he would do, but, you know, and then another guy at Houston who was
Doug Belk,
who was the, and I don't think he's related to the Belk department store, but he worked at Alabama with Kirby, I believe, as a grad assistant, maybe. He got promoted from co-defense coordinator to defense coordinator, so he'll be running the show entirely. So that would be that would keep him away from Georgia, I would suspect. You know, one name I did not put on the list was Will Muschamp, who is the former coach at South Carolina. You might have heard of him. Good friends with Kirby Smart. Did a weight loss challenge with him in the summer or in the offseason.
Who won?
Did not hear that divulged. I don't know. Don't know. But, look, I didn't put him on the list because I don't think Will Muschamp is going from being an SEC head coach to being a position coach.
And what would that mean for his contract, SC's buyout or whatever they had to pay him? I mean, can he not take a position like that? Do we know that?
I don't know the details on that particular buyout. I know he was getting like $13 to $15 million. And I also know that Georgia has paid analyst, if that's what he's going to end up doing at Georgia or anywhere else, you know, kind of a nominal fee of like $50,000 or something, just so you know, you can say you're getting some money and then still having your former school pay you. I presume that's kind of the way that works. Now, you know, we've heard and have seen from people that you know, Will Muschamp's been around town. His son is a walk-on quarterback, Jackson Muschamp. Just finished his freshman year at Georgia. He has another son that's maybe a junior now, I think, or a sophomore, I'm not sure, Witt, who you know, played last season at a private school in the Columbia area, South Carolina. But, you know, Muschamp has a chance. I mean, they're still changing in the coaching profession. You're seeing it on the NFL level. You know, Michigan just made some changes. Just brought aboard Mike McDonald, who was a former Georgia staffer, you know, not an on-field coach, but, you know, a support guy. And so, you know, Muschamp might just be seeing how all that works out. Georgia came out yesterday after a report that Muschamp was working for Georgia already to say, nope, he's not employed by Georgia. Now, that could be some semantics. You know, as you mentioned, I mean, it's not like he's like needs to be hired and start making $300,000 salary or something. Right. So, Kirby certainly could be given Will Muschamp access to the football facility and come on in and watch film. And we want you to look at this. And, you know, when Kirby and Will want to announce something, I think that they will if they want to. And that might not come for, you know, a week or two or 2 months.
Or never.
Right.
Another name you had on the list, Derek Ansley, Tennessee defensive coordinator, former defensive coordinator. What do you make of what's happened at Tennessee? I mean, if the rumors are true that they're just handing out McDonald's bags of money, that's not a good look.
Now, when you say rumors, that came from Dan Patrick's radio show.
Hey, you know, you looked into that last week, I think, after our podcast, did you not?
I don't even remember when that was now. Was that last week or the week before?
Yeah, I know. They all run together.
Yeah, I mean, I checked with Georgia after he said that Georgia was being sloppy with some recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
And
but he also said that about Tennessee.
And
right?
He said that the NCAA might be about to investigate Georgia. And Georgia said, as far as we know, that was news to them. They aren't aware of any pending investigation.
No, you didn't expect them to come out and say, yeah, they're looking into us. We were sloppy.
No, but I would say if there was something maybe there, that they would just not answer the question. That's just my experience with them. Or you know, it's kind of the way it might operate. But I don't know. Isn't that a little bit too like cartoonish to just put money in a McDonald's bag? Wouldn't they be a little bit more discreet about it?
You would think.
I don't know. They did get rid of two on-field assistant coaches beyond firing Jeremy Pruitt, and like seven football recruiting staffers. Yeah. Now you might remember Georgia, cut ties with a couple of recruiting staffers, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago by now.
April of 19. Yeah.
Yeah. So. It's not like they haven't had some issues, but nothing that's, as far as we know now, raised to that kind of level. Whether they wanted to get rid of Jeremy Pruitt because that program had been declining and, they didn't want to fight any kind of recruiting issues that they had.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure his attorney and Tennessee will be trying to come to a settlement on that buyout money over there.
Does this feel like a situation where a Derek Dooley type of hire is next? I mean, just let's get somebody. They're not going after a big name at Tennessee right now, is what I'm saying. They're not. I mean, you hear Hugh Freeze kind of name thrown out there, but why would you go after that guy with the troubles he's had?
No, I mean, I wouldn't expect he's going to get the job, but that doesn't mean that they're not going to get a big name. I mean, I think they're going to try.
Who would want to come in there and clean that mess up, though?
Gus Malzahn's available. I don't think he's necessarily a great fit there, but I mean, there are some. Maybe Luke Fickell at Cincinnati that we just saw. He'd like to move on to the SEC. I mean, I think that would be – he seems to be a guy that's run a clean program, and that would be a good move. There's some coordinators, maybe Tony Elliott at Clemson, maybe Brent Venables at Clemson. You can find a lot. I mean, maybe they make a run for Oregon's head coach who has SEC ties.
Cristobal?
Yeah. Now, he's had some NCAA issues, I believe, as well. So, back in the day.
All my weeks run together. It was last week, though, that Dan Lanning turned down an offer to go to Texas. That was about the same time, I think, that everything coming out with Dan Patrick saying what he said. So that's another, you wouldn't think that a Dan Lanning would take off to take that type of job at the moment after just announcing that he wouldn't take the Texas job.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think he would be a candidate there at this point. Right. Look at Missouri's first-year head coach. Maybe go get him. He had a good first season. He coached at App State already. Those kind of things. I mean, look at Auburn. I thought they were, kind of a little outside the box to go get the Brian Harsin from Boise. You can find some successful coaches outside of the SEC footprint.
Well, I'm thinking about basketball now and Alabama with what they did. They went and kind of got a guy from Buffalo that nobody really heard of, and look at what Alabama's doing right now in basketball. So I'm just saying, if you think outside the box, then it doesn't have to be that splash hire.
Yeah. Now, I kind of want to walk back something. I'm not certain with Mario Cristobal whether he was – I think I might have been confusing him with another former Alabama assistant that used to be with the Falcons, Tua Lapoa. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. But so, let me take that back because I'm not certain. I haven't done the background on that, but I do think he's that Oregon program is very much run like an SEC program because of his background at Alabama. And didn't they go get Brian McClendon out of South Carolina?
Former Bulldog coach and player.
And they have the Mississippi State's former head coach that was at Penn State as the offensive coordinator. So
Moorhead? Joe Moorhead, yeah.
No, it would be very good, though, if Jerry Moorhead could call plays at Oregon and also run the UGA campus. That would be impressive.
Absolutely. Can't wait to have another meeting, Zoom meeting with Jerry Moorhead. Hey, let's take a break right there, all right? When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more football, maybe a little more basketball, and get you through your day with the Bulldogs Extra podcast from Online Athens and Athens Banner Herald. We'll be right back after this. All right, thanks for hanging in there with us on the Bulldogs Extra podcast. Mark, future Bulldog stud quarterback, everyone hopes, Brock Vandergriff, received the High School National Quarterback of the Year by the National Quarterbacks Club. That includes, members like Tim Tebow. Who else is on that list? Brock Berlin, I think, was the name. Vince Young. So if you go by those types of players, then Georgia might have a bright future in Prince Avenue Christian quarterback Brock Vandegrift.
Is Brock bringing all these trophies to Athens to his, I know he's an early enrollee, one of 16, I guess.
Well, he doesn't have far to go to see him.
I know, but you want to kind of impress your new kind of suite mates or whatever, or, you know, when you're coming back from the East Campus dining hall or wherever he lives, and, maybe you got a plate of, what's your favorite? You got a story about some of the dining facilities, what you enjoy?
Well, as you know, I was a staffer at Snelling Dining Hall for several years.
Is that as ritzy as some of the other ones?
So, you know, they built New Bolton there at the bottom of the hill there, kind of right there at Tate Center. So you can see Stegman Coliseum in the distance. That's probably the new ritzy one. ECV over there, where the football players live, is probably second. But Snelling is an older building. But yeah, I mean, you know, anything off the grill there, a nice Philly steak sandwich or something like that. Each dining hall has something unique and different. Any of you former UGA alums on here, feel free to tell us what your favorite dining hall is, because I mean, I'm biased with my Snelling because I worked there as a student employee for years. So.
Well, I guess my point is that, you know, if you have...
There goes the phone. Sorry.
Ron just broke something here in the studio. I don't know what that was. That's your phone? Oh.
All right, we're back.
I would just say, just kind of have those, you know, maybe just outside your dorm room or whatever, just have a bunch of them. And
probably bring back a slice or two of pizza or something.
Good conversation piece.
Hey, I was going to mention that his favorite target, Brock Vandegrift's favorite target in high school, we got to see a lot of him since it's a local school, Prince Avenue Christian, but Logan Johnson is a little, my dad would call a water bug. I mean, he's about 5'5", standing on his tiptoes, but he makes people miss. I know if y'all saw Prince Avenue in the state championship game, he caught a punt at about the 10, made a couple guys miss. You know, he's one of those kind of he has almost that dead leg move, kind of like DeAndre Swift was known for. And, you know, it's kind of a preferred walk-on position. I know he was offered. I think Glenn Schumann might have offered him that. And, you know, it's one of those things where I don't know if a preferred walk-on can come in and make an impact. You know, sometimes, it's for the betterment of the team during practice and whatnot. But given the fact that he knows Brock Vandegrift so well, you know, he might get an opportunity in there sometime to make an impact. You know, whether that's a punt returner, you know, you think of his size. I know Isaiah McKenzie was a little bit bigger than this kid, but, he's the kind that might get on the field. We'll have to see.
Is he going to come here or go to Troy?
Oh, yeah, I forgot. He is a Troy commit. I've talked about that to people. It's like if you have a full scholarship offered to a program, like a Troy, I might take that over preferred walk-on, but grew up a Georgia fan. Hey, go to onlineathens.com. We got a story up about him and his success and why he was offered the preferred walk-on and all. But, if he can come here, you know, maybe get an academic scholarship for a little bit, it might be worth him doing that just for that reason alone.
Hey, you know, when we did our last podcast, I think it was very soon after that day, there was an announcement that Zamir White was coming back to Georgia. It's been a while since we podcasted. It was only, I guess it was a week, 8 days ago. Mm-hmm. But that was the last of the announcements, I think, that we were waiting on from Georgia.
Didn't surprise me.
No. I mean, except he's a running back and a guy that had two knee injuries. But, you know, it's interesting. People kind of take stock and they do. Overall, the people, I think the conventional wisdom is that Georgia came out of this NFL decisions kind of on the winning side. But I noticed there was a list by one of the media outlets, I can't remember which one, that had Georgia on the losing side. Because you did lose Eric Stokes, you lost Azeez Ojulari, you lost Tyson Campbell, and also Trey Hill.
How many are people really disappointed about Campbell? I think he underperformed in a lot of people's eyes.
Oh, man. Mr. and Mrs. Tyson Campbell and family. Ryan Dennis.
I didn't say it was me.
Ryan Dennis. What's your office number if they want to call you and talk to you about that?
Yeah. 555.
I mean, he was a five-star that, came in with a lot of hype and came after DeAndre Baker. So there was a lot of comparison to him. That's true. Then he kind of got upstaged a little bit by Eric Stokes.
You're right.
Mm-hmm. Who, was more of
ironically came in for him because he got injured at Missouri and stole the show.
Yeah. So you're saying, well, I mean, you look at the secondary, then you get Tyreek Stevenson also with a transfer going to the U. You know, you sure would love Tyson Campbell to come back and give you some stability, some experience, yeah. But well, cornerbacks in particular, now DeAndre Baker came back and played his senior season, so.
Well, you also have the kid from Arizona coming in next year.
Keely Ringo.
Full time, after being injured.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, you think about games like Auburn where he shut down the Williams guy, and then you think of other times where he might have gotten beaten a few times. But, hey, do you like golf? I mean, I know you don't really play golf. I go out and swing clubs. I wouldn't say I play golf. But you a golf guy?
I mean, do I mind watching the professional golfers you know, knock it through in the beautiful Maui, picturesque. Now, where are they? Are they at Pebble Beach this week?
No, it's
Southern California. Torrey Pines.
Yeah, I thought it was. No, you know that's San Diego, isn't it? Torrey Pines. Yeah. They're at La Quinta or something like that.
They're playing at La Quinta in the parking lot. That's awesome.
A little round of putt putt there.
Are you going to the Masters again?
I doubt it. They're doing limited everything again.
April,
so,
right?
Yeah. So I doubt I'll go. That is my. I mean, I. You know, I got in this profession knowing that, you know, I would love to cover football and stuff like that and basketball. But my favorite thing to do is go to the Masters. I mean, it's uncomfortable.
George's Chris Kirk just finished second, I believe it was, right?
So that's what I was getting to.
Now, this was in Hawaii, but not in Maui. This was
the Wailai Country Club, the Wailai Invitational.
So that's is that near Honolulu?
It's in Wailai. That's all I know. I looked it up the other day, and I can't remember.
Which island is it?
I want to say Oahu, but I could be off.
Okay, Oahu is, I think, where Honolulu is.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah, so Chris Kirk, he's in Athens, actually Watkinsville resident. I got a chance to talk to him. You know, well documented, some of the struggles he went through, alcoholism, depression, and kind of got away from the game for a little while and then had to battle his way back. He had a big Corn Ferry Tour win last year that kind of, I think, gave him the hope that this was a moment that, you know, I can still play this game. And so, anyway, he kind of had lost his PGA Tour privileges, except for a couple. Last week, he had to finish in a tie for second or better to win or to receive his full-time card back on the PGA Tour, and I'll be damned if he didn't. It was pretty cool to see, and I got a chance to talk to him on Wednesday. There'll be a story up soon about him, maybe in the next few days. But
now you talked to him before or after he did a Feinbaum interview yesterday?
Yeah, I had a 10-minute slot before his 5 p.m. appearance on Feinbaum. So
you could have, like, let's say you just asked him some questions that pissed him off. Like, if you were like, hey, your short game needs a lot of work or something.
Yeah.
If you said something, you could have put him in a bad mood. He'd go in Feinbaum, and, you know, that would be the impression he would have left with him.
Yeah, so Feinbaum did ask, I guess... I did ask him a little bit about his situation, but I really wanted to know what the community and how UGA helped him through his tough times. So that's kind of the story I'm working on. You know, Feinbaum straight up asked him about his, you know, how he beat it and all that stuff.
When will your story be?
I hadn't decided that yet. Probably early next week, now that I think about it, because it's just a lot of stuff going on this week. So anyway, hey, Lady Dogs. I want to talk about them. I thought they were dead in the water last week against Tennessee. I think they got down 17 points. I was like, eh, they ain't pulling this off. Typical Georgia women's basketball. Build up a little bit of hope and then get blown out by a good team. But they came back and won. That might be a jumping off spot for them to really launch this program forward, you know, under Joni Taylor.
Yeah, they are playing tonight as we record this.
That's going to be a tough
6:30 game against the Gamecocks in South Carolina, Dawn Staley. Quite a women's basketball night, if that's your thing. I believe it's Connecticut and Tennessee tonight as well. But Ron is a big Lady Dogs fan. So he'll be – Ron, what do you usually – when you watch the Lady Dogs, do you have a couple beers on your side? And
I always order wings.
Order wings. look, I don't expect them to go there and win. Because it's South Carolina and it's a tough environment, but they're playing very good basketball. I had a chance to talk to Joni Taylor and Jenna Stady for a story that's on onlineathens.com right now if you want to read that about how they broke back into the national rankings. They are at 22 in the, I think it's a coaches poll, 23 AP, or maybe the other way around. I can't remember, but first time they've been ranked since November of 2018. 18. Where's it, 19? Yeah, 18.
It had to be 18 because that was that year McKenzie.
2018. Now, it's an interesting deal, obviously, with this season. I mean, Vanderbilt just shut down their women's basketball season. They followed Duke. They followed Virginia.
Yeah.
But they haven't had any pauses on the Georgia women's basketball program, knock on wood, I guess. They are a 4 seed in one of the projections by ESPN's Charlie Cream. So there will be March Madness, at least on the women's side for Georgia, the way things are looking at this point. And I think that tournament might be in San Antonio.
It's all one location, right?
Yeah,
it is.
Indiana is going to be on the men's side. So very balanced team, very senior-oriented team. And it's year 6 for Joni Taylor, and she said she thought it might take this long.
Well, you know, they had that good year. I guess that was her third year. The last time they were
ranked. Yeah, they went like 26-7.
But they always would face that moment where they'd play a good team. Mississippi State, you know, was maybe national champs that year before. When they played Tennessee, when they played anybody that was good, I think even they got, you know, kind of exposed, so to speak, in the tournament because they played a good Duke team and got throttled there too. So, you know, whenever they played a good team in the Joni Taylor era, it was not pretty. So that's why I think that the win at Tennessee to be able to come back like that was a good sign for the program. Now, like you'd mentioned against South Carolina tonight, not that they need to win, but they need a good showing, I think, to prove that, you know what, that they might be turning this around. Because they do lose a lot of talent going forward because it is a very, very senior-laden team.
I believe they're recruiting well, though, so they'll be able to reinforce.
Maybe. Maybe. We'll see. They're still missing out on the likes of Kayla McPherson, a 5-star from up the road in Danielsville, you know, do-it-all type of point guard who can rebound, shoot, and everything else. So they still need to round up Georgia a little better.
All right, I'm calling up right now the Hoop Girls ESPN.
Yeah, so there's one girl, I think, in the top 50, if that.
Georgia's got number 34, Reagan Richardson. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it. She's a guard out of North Carolina. They have number 37, Jillian Hollingshed, forward out of McEachern in Georgia. That might be in the top 50.
So I got an email a couple weeks ago, and it was a release of the top 100 Southeast players, and they only had one of those. So and like 20 of them were from Georgia. So that's why I feel like they need to get a and it's not just Joni. It goes back to, you know, later in Andy Lander's years where they let some people slip away, Maya Moore to Connecticut type of stuff, you know, from right down the road. Hey, before we get out of here, I wanted to mention Josh Brooks. He, decided that he wants to donate a little bit, give back to the community. What do we know about what Josh is pledging to do now that he's become the full-time athletic director of the University of Georgia?
Josh said this on the day he was hired, that he was going to, you know, make a donation from his increased salary to Clark County Schools to, you know, provide to some need-based, you know, for kids in that kids that go to school here to give back to the community. His kids go to public schools. So Josh has donated $100,000 in that way to kind of give back to the folks. And it's $100,000 to create a need-based scholarship that will support UGA students from Athens Clark County.
And he was a big part of the, was it Dogs for Pups to Dogs program or whatever that thing was called, right? Wasn't he kind of the one that got it started off the ground?
It's going to add to the more than 550 endowed need-based scholarships created already at Georgia since January of 2017. So, you know, maybe if we have Josh on the podcast, we can ask him about that. And then we'll also throw in some other questions like,
what his favorite Athens burger is. That's
that would be one of them. But Ryan will be asking about exactly, you know, is the burrito the best thing to serve at a Stegman game? Or you know, Ryan would complain about what he... Ryan, would you do like wings, wouldn't you?
For pregame meal?
Yeah.
I don't know. That might get messy. That burrito last night wasn't bad. I won't lie. So,
Hey, all right, I think we're about done right now.
Let's get out of here.
See ya.
In fact, I'm going to get a burger right now from Porterhouse right down the road. So, yeah, let's skedaddle.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks.
See ya.